From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Andrew Richards.
I'm Graham McIntyre.
And we have a new guest today. Graham, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a member of the Windows Reliability Team. We're one of the tenant teams within Windows, and that means we watch basically the overall Windows reliability. That means working with partners, working with internal teams, and spending a lot of time going through crash dump files and using SQL databases to look at what's failing and trying to make it better for the next release.
Cool.
Excellent. And Andrew, what are we going to talk about today?
So Graham, the main part of the Graham teams does is OCA, which is online crash analysis. And so we're going to talk about what OCA does and how the data is collected, all those different sizes, how it's carved up sometimes, how we analyze it, and just in general, what changes we made in Windows 8 to make OCA even more awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So go for your life.
All right.
Show us cool stuff.
Well, I'm sure if you've been using Windows for a while, you've probably seen the message that comes up after an unexpected reboot that says that your system is has experienced a crash. Would you like to send this data to Microsoft?
Yep.
Contrary to popular belief, that data actually does go somewhere, and it goes through this OCA pipeline, online crash analysis pipeline. And eventually makes it to my desk. So I guess we could talk about kind of what happens when a crash dump happens, and then we can talk about how we analyze this data and what we do with it.
You talk about how many of those you get? There must be a lot.
If you consider that we have, what is it, over 100 million people running Windows, it's a good amount of data that comes through. So yeah.
All right.
We have a good sample set.
That's right, exactly. If we want to do statistical analysis, we have a good set of data to do it on. If we talk about what happens when your machine crashes, maybe we'll kind of start from there and work forward. So, well, when you hit a bug check, what really happens? Well, that means typically some piece of code within the kernel has called an API. It's called KE bug check. Because it's detected that some unrecoverable condition has occurred. Mm-hmm.
Both the OS and device drivers can do that, right? It doesn't have to be just Microsoft code that does that.
Correct. It's normally within the kernel. Most bug checks are going to occur within the kernel because they've detected some failure, but mm-hmm. A driver can call bug check itself if it has detected some unrecoverable condition within its driver.
Yep.
And that's essentially going to cause the system to freeze. All of the other processors will be frozen. The current processors interrupt request level will be brought up to high level, so that way no other interrupts will come in.
That's the highest, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's taken to what's called high level, which means that I'm a debugger and not even clock interrupts, nothing else could come in. So that allows it to now do things like call bug check callbacks, mm-hmm. Which are functions that drivers and other OS components have registered for that allow them to add additional data to a dump file if requested. So that could be adding just additional memory pages, mm-hmm. Or you could also add what's called secondary data, which is let's say like for a video bug check, you may want to get some state information from the GPU.
Okay.
So you could save that in what's called a secondary region. So it's not doesn't have to be mapped virtual address region, but it could be added as kind of the blob.
Yeah, the primary region in the dump file, which is what we've been showing in the show, is us debugging through the memory, but it's debugging through the memory, the physical memory, and it's a kernel dump, it's the physical memory. When it's a user dump, it's the virtualization of that memory.
Right, right.
But it's all about memory. So you're talking about in a secondary form memory that isn't your RAM sticks.
Exactly.
Or anything else that's got some type of state to it.
That's right. That's right. So some data it makes sense to add just as regular memory to the dump file. Mm-hmm. Other data, for example, GPU data, may not be mapped to some virtual address, so it's added just kind of as a blob, as mm-hmm. secondary data to the dump, and then there are debugger APIs you can use to pull that data out, so that can be used.
The building commands in the debugger aren't designed to look at that data, though. You really have to write a debugger extension that knows how to interpret that data?
That's right. You can dump it out with the debugger. There's an extension called .enum tag, mm-hmm. Which will dump out the tag data, but it's just going to show it in a binary format. And you probably won't be able to see much with it without having an extension that's going to process that in another fashion. But it is viewable.
Yeah, cool. So
once these callbacks are completed, then eventually the data is going to be written out to the page file.
Mm-hmm.
provided that there's enough room in the page file, then that should complete successfully. And basically, it's going to write a dump header to the top of the page file, and then eventually the system's going to reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you were to just unplug the system at that point and look for a memory.dump file on the system, you wouldn't find one, because it doesn't exist yet. The dump is actually still in the page file.
Mm-hmm.
It's not later until the next boot, when SMSS is running, that SMSS will check the page file to see if it has a dump header on it. If it does, it realizes, hey, we must have had a crash. So he's going to rename the page file to a temporary name. And then a little bit later in boot, WinInit is going to call into WerFault, which is the Windows Error Reporting Service, and he's going to do a couple things. He's going to make a mini dump from the full dump, because a kernel dump is, you know, potentially hundreds and hundreds of megs, right?
Or
gigs. Yeah, it could be very, very large.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily want to send that giant file every time a system crashes. So if we want to be able to try to determine what happened on this on the system, if it is a known issue or if there's a fix available for it, we can create a small mini dump file from it. This is called carving, and WerFault can do that.
So the whole point of the mini dump is to really, you know, succinctly to say this is a signature of the issue. It's barely enough information, we think, to get us to a problem.
Exactly. The point of a mini dump should be that we can categorize or classify this issue, have enough information in there that we can do analysis to say that this is issue A or issue B or issue C. May not be enough information to find root cause on it, but enough to identify the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have special handling within WerFault for certain types of dumps. So, for example, a 9F bug check, which is a power watchdog bug check. It means that we were trying to do a power transition and some device didn't respond in time. Those typically, you need quite a bit of information in order to be able to find, you know, what the faulting driver is or what the faulting hardware is. So we add specific pieces of information, such as all the power threads and the device objects and the ERPs and the things that are relevant to that that problem to this mini dump file. So then once this is complete, now you have a memory.dump in your Windows folder, which is the full kernel memory dump file, and then you're also going to have a mini dump file that lives under the Windows mini dumps folder that was created from that full dump.
So that's a C Windows mini dump, right?
C Windows mini dump, right. And then the file will have a date and timestamp on it. So now at this point, this is where you'll see the dialog box. It says that your system has experienced a problem. Would you like to send this to Microsoft? When you say yes, what's going to happen is that mini dump file will be submitted along with a couple XML files that have some file version information and some other system information, like the BIOS manufacturer, the system manufacturer, just a little bit of other metadata.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets submitted to our OCA front end servers. So the OCA servers, they open up this cab file that has the dump and the XML files in it, and they run the bang analyze command, pretty much the same one that you run when you open the debugger. And they run it against the dump file, and it's going to go through, look at the bug check code, the thread states, you know, other data that it can find, and then with that, it's going to generate what's called a bucket ID. So a bucket ID is a string that's a unique name that should identify this particular problem. So it might say like AV for access violation, and then if we've done stack analysis to determine that we think this particular frame, this particular function is the one that should be at fault, then that would be added to this string.
So that's the one you see in Bang Analyze, which has lots of uppercase letters, and it tends to have a module name and underscores and
exactly. So that string is a concatenation of several different pieces of information. For a bug check, it's usually the bug check code, maybe some other additional information that we have extracted that might, maybe based on the parameters, that might have something a little more specific. Mm-hmm. And then if we can blame a particular file or function, that would be listed as well. So this should allow us to determine relatively accurately what the cause of this bug check was, enough that we can now look to see if we have a solution that has been assigned to this particular bucket, because we know that a later version of a driver or an OS fix will resolve it, or there may be just a response that's tied to this bucket for an issue that maybe the root cause isn't known, but we have asked for additional data that we're as we're trying to find the root cause of it. So one thing that can happen at this stage is you may actually get another request that says, hey, Microsoft is looking for additional information on this problem. And what that means is that we've set that particular bucket up to ask for additional secondary data. And that may be, like, the most common thing we would ask for would be the full kernel dump file.
Okay.
Because if this is an issue that we haven't root caused yet, then having the full kernel dump file is going to give us the information we need to really root cause it.
Mm-hmm.
So you may see either a response with a solution, or you may see a request for additional data. If you choose to send additional data, then the kernel dump file will then be sent up as well. And you know that could take a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But eventually, the results of all this is going to go into the reliability center in the control panel, and that will tell you whether a solution was found for the issue or not.
My machine is taking off. I think it's taxiing.
Mine is too. We have competing HPs taxiing for takeoff.
It's awesome warmer here now, though.
Yeah.
So when this the request for additional data comes down, is it given to everybody who's receiving the bug check, or do we only do it to a proportion of the requestees?
Well, so we'll typically have some threshold set on how much additional data we want. So, you know, many times we'll say, okay, we want 3 kernel dumps of this issue. So,
okay. So
until we get 3 dumps reported, then machines will be requested. And then once we've hit we've gotten our 3 dumps, then the requests wouldn't be sent down to additional machines.
That's cool.
But I think it is interesting that we do all this while the TCP connection that the client makes to the server is still open. So we do all this analysis within under 10 seconds, so we can send the result back to the client, and then we can either send them the solution if it's known, or request additional data. So it's done very quickly.
So is the solution mapped with a KB article, or that doesn't have to happen? Can we give out solutions that don't have KB articles to explain them?
Yes, there some solutions have been created by OEMs directly.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if an OEM knows that they have a fix for, let's say, a particular video card or video driver, then you may be taken to a page that will link you directly to the OEM's page to download that driver, or you may see a link that will just tell you that you should run Windows Update and that you'll receive the latest driver. It depends on how it was deployed. So some will take you to KB articles, but they may also take you to some other resource on how that problem could be resolved.
Cool.
So at what point does a person get involved? Because it sounds like, you know, this is all programmatic up to this point. At what point do you get involved and start troubleshooting things by hand?
Sure, that's a great question. So again, there's quite a bit of data that comes in on a daily basis, and we need to figure out how to use this data. So the next thing that happens after we've already sent the response or request for additional data back to the client is we're going to do additional processing on this dump file to extract information from it, put it into a database, such that we can then do much more powerful statistical analysis on this data.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, we can find some really interesting information. So what we'll do is we'll extract out information from the dump. So that's going to be, obviously, the bug check parameters, the bucket name that we've already pulled out. We can also pull out a list of the modules and the timestamps and version information from those.
Mm-hmm.
The BIOS version, system build information,
so why is the
a
BIOS
lot of the
version,
metadata.
Why is the BIOS version important?
Well, the BIOS version is important because we have found that certain issues, can occur more often on certain machines or certain BIOSes. This is one of the kind of powerful things that we can do with the statistical analysis side of it. So, we can look at a particular problem and look to see, well, what is the percentage of particular machines or particular versions, file versions or other things, and we can use that to find root causes or to find patterns in this data that we wouldn't otherwise see. So if we can see that a particular failure is only happening on a particular version, or 90% of the hits are on a particular BIOS version of a particular vendor, that's going to help narrow down our avenue of what we're going to do to look into the root cause and try to find it. And sometimes we can find that it actually is related to the BIOS or firmware directly.
Mm-hmm. And how about things like Intel versus AMD versus stuff like that? Is that, you know, actual CPU vendor maybe? Does that type of thing also get correlated?
It does. So we, again, we pull all this information out, and so for every dump file that comes in, we're gonna populate, you know, various tables and databases with information that we've been able to retrieve from it. And so the first thing that we're gonna do to get to how does it get to my desk is we're going to look to see, okay, well, which of these issues are happening most often? We can use this to prioritize our work to determine, you know, best bang for the buck. If we fix this issue, we're going to fix the most customers. So I typically am focused on looking at the issues rated based on how many people are hitting these issues. So once have determined a particular issue is happening frequently, we also look for trends, like, you know, after Patch Tuesday, we'll look to see, okay, are there any new crashes that are coming in after Patch Tuesday we weren't seeing before Patch Tuesday? Because maybe that's indicative of, you know, potential regression or something else. And so we'll look for trending buckets and look for, you know, anything that looks like that would be interesting to tackle. So once we've picked those out, then that's when I'll start opening up dump files, going through these and seeing if I can determine what's going on. You know, either if there is an existing response, then I'll link the bucket to that response. If it's some new issue, then we'll either engage the vendor or the internal teams and file bugs to actually get the issues fixed.
I'll point out that Graham used to be on my team, and Graham's known as one of the best debuggers on the planet.
So, nice.
Because a lot of time we don't have the full dumps uploaded, and so he's debugging just the minis, which have close to no information.
Yeah.
And to Graham's credit, he solves cases regularly with very little amount of information.
Yeah, and I've gotten a lot. I mean, I'm really comfortable with WinDBG. I mean, I pretty much spend my whole day in the debugger, and I've gotten more comfortable with doing this kind of statistical debugging, where I start slicing these buckets different ways to look for, you know, what is common, what is the common piece here, and you know, there's a little bit of kind of, you know, that reverse engineering mentality required to kind of make guesses. But the other thing we can do is, if I have a theory of, okay, I think that this might be, you know, what is related to this problem, like maybe if I just look at one more thing in this dump file that Bang Analyze didn't already do, that would tell me whether this is correct or incorrect. So I can write a script that will script through hundreds or thousands of dump files to validate some theory that I have, and from that, you know, it'll tell me whether my theory was correct, in which I know that, okay, this is what we should do to go fix the problem, or whether, you know, I should take a different direction. I think, talking about the BIOS again, one interesting thing that we're doing now with Windows 8 is we've started adding a little bit more information about the memory pages that are associated with the particular failure. Mm-hmm. So for access violations, those can happen for various reasons, but, you know, many times it's due to a memory corruption problem. Yeah. We add enough information to the mini dumps now that I can determine the physical page or the PFN.
Does the actual chip on the physical piece of RAM we're talking about, the PFN maps to a physical,
exactly.
Something really physical.
Right, it's an actual physical address, which is interesting for several reasons, but the main reason that physical addresses are interesting is because when a firmware or BIOS is working with memory, it's going to work in this physical space. And the same thing when you're working with a piece of hardware, it does what's called DMA, which is a direct memory access, and it uses that using physical addresses. So we've been able to track down firmware and hardware DMA bugs by using this statistical analysis to say, okay, we see a lot of crashes on this particular machine with this particular BIOS where the failure is happening at this exact physical address.
But for all different reasons, though.
Right, and because these are going to manifest in many, many different ways. But if we look at it a slightly different way and look at, okay, well, what was the physical page that was corrupted, we've actually used this to track down, you know, memory failures that happen after sleep resume cycles on particular BIOS systems, and been able to have the BIOS fixed to resolve those issues. So, in fact, we can even push out temporary fixes to say, okay, let's mark this particular physical page as bad, so that way Windows doesn't use it, and it'll prevent those systems from getting corrupted in the first place.
Very cool. So how do you know when a system's crashed? Is there any tool in Windows that shows you the recent crashes and and stuff like that?
There is, actually. The tool is on Windows, I think Vista and forward. And Windows 8, it's still there. It's slightly different. But if you just do a search for reliability, you'll see that there is a control panel item called reliability history. And what this is going to show you is it's going to show you a graph of the various issues that you've had. I think you might have your reliability service stopped here.
Maybe.
But we can also look at problem reports. So this is going to show us various failures that the system has seen and what the current status of that report is. So if we look under Windows, we can see that your system here has two reports, one that has a solution available and one that hasn't been reported yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if we pull up one of these reports, we can see that you had a D1 bug check, and the bucket ID, which is what came back from the OCA server, said it was this thing called this AV and this thing called my fault. And
this Rusinovich code is buggy as hell.
And we can see that it actually has a solution. So if we click on solution, oh, it looks like we might have a connectivity issue here.
It's probably my laptop. But yeah, you can use that tool to get solutions.
Exactly.
And it'll show you KB articles or third-party websites or...
Exactly. And in this case, since it's my fault, I've seen that one before, you've seen that one before, that's going to say, you ran a tool that crashed your system on purpose. So that is the solution for that one.
And is the service for this turned on by default?
It is turned on by default, yes.
Yeah, I've been playing around with my machine. Yep. I'm surprised. Yeah.
I shouldn't have trusted your hardware, Andrew. I should have done better.
Yeah.
But if we use this check for solutions, this is going to take any unsubmitted reports, because if your system isn't connected to the internet when you first boot the machine up, then our chance to prompt you to say, hey, is it okay if we send this mini dump to the servers? We don't have that opportunity, so it gets queued. So those queued reports will be submitted. I think it's every 30 days we'll take the opportunity to ask you if you want to submit them. But we try to stay kind of out of the way and not bother you with them. So again, that will show you the reliability history of the machine. You can see if any reports have been sent up and if any solutions are there. And that's in the Problem Center. The other place that you can look is if you look in the Event Viewer.
And what's your favorite way to open the Event Viewer these days?
My favorite way to open the Event Viewer these days is Windows X is the best shortcut on Windows 8. It lets you get to all the power user stuff very quickly. So I can hit Windows X and then V, and then it's going to bring up Event Viewer for me.
Yeah.
It's a great, quick way to launch it. So if you look in the application log and you filter it down to Windows error reporting events, then you will see a set of events that are related to Windows error reporting.
So this is both blue screen kernel ones and also application crashes?
Correct. If we look through a couple of these, you can see there's an event name here. Mm-hmm. And we could filter it down further just to show the blue screens. But I just clicked around and I see here's a blue screen event. And this is a 1001 event. And if we open this event up, we can see that this is the event that was logged after we've already talked to OCA. And OCA has looked up the bucket and found a solution and returned it back. So
cool.
It gives us information about the response, as well as here some information about the files that were sent. We can see that it actually, in this case, it looks like we were requested to send a secondary dump, the full dump. So that was sent, as well as the location of some of these other XML files and other data that was sent up to the server.
So is there any major differences in Windows 8? Say comparative to Windows 7 and the way that we make dump files. I think there's a new automatic type.
Yeah, the automatic type is something new that was introduced specifically due to another change that we did, which is to allow the page file to be reduced in size over time based on the actual usage of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, on server systems, your page file can be very, very large if your physical memory is very, very large.
Yeah.
And it may be that you actually don't need a page file that big, and the system really isn't paging all that often.
Yeah, the only reason we have it is so we can put a dump file in the page file, which is
right,
really the best use of your space, yeah.
Exactly, right. So now with Windows 8, the system can actually determine how much page file is really needed over time, and it can allow the page file to shrink to be smaller than physical memory. What the automatic dump type says is that we're going to write a kernel dump. It is essentially the same as a kernel dump type. Mm-hmm. However, it says it's okay if the page file is smaller than physical memory. Because normally, if you try to write a kernel dump and the page file isn't as big as physical memory, it would just fail immediately.
So even though the kernel dump is smaller than physical memory, the full memory dump, the dump file still had to be the size of a full memory dump for the kernel dump to occur?
Right, that's true. So now with the automatic type, it allows the... It basically compensates for this new change that allows the page file to shrink. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is it will try to write the page file or the memory out to the page file, which works, I think it's about 85% of the time, pretty high percent of the time we can fit it in there. Mm-hmm. If for some reason we tried to write the dump file and it wouldn't fit in the page file, what would happen is a mini dump would be created on that boot, but we would then on the next boot realize that we couldn't write a dump file, and it would actually change the size of the page file temporarily to make it the size of full memory for some period of time. I think it's maybe a week around there. So that way, if a dump, or if an issue did happen again, a full dump could be written. And then after that time expires, then the page file can shrink back to regular size.
So the more you're stable, the smaller it gets. If you, as you get unstable, it grows, lets you get a solution, and then teeter off to small files again. That's cool.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of a cool way. Again, it's similar to kernel, but it's to kernel dump, but it's a way to deal with this potentially smaller page file. Mm-hmm.
So automatic's trying to get a kernel, and if kernel doesn't fit because the page file is just so small, it does it. Cool.
Exactly. Yeah.
How do you work with OEMs when you determine that the problem is a result of their code?
Well, we have another set of folks at Microsoft that that are the kind of the OEM engagement team. So they typically have a direct relationship with various OEMs. So if I wanted to get a issue in front of one of those OEMs, I would typically, we can open up a bug, which they can see, and then I can work with our ecosystem team to make sure that that the bug is shown to those OEMs. And then typically then that'll start an email conversation, and we'll discuss various options and what kind of data they need or what we can do to help them.
I mean, the OEMs are on campus. They have offices here for this exact reason, to have a really good relationship with Microsoft. So it's literally a matter of calling someone up in the same time zone, same building even.
Yep.
So it's not a hard relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We work with them pretty closely, and we send every OEM, you know, reliability data every month to let them know, you know, how their systems are doing. And they use this to determine, well, what issues that they should be looking into. And so the data is actually used by our partners, of course, in the ways that it's allowed to be used, but we can use this. Like, we also have the same relationships with some of the biggest third-party software manufacturers, such that we can work with them to make sure that they are aware of how their application is doing and if there are any new trending issues. And we can do quite a bit just based on this data to fix bugs, which. It, again, coming from the support background, when I was looking at one or two crashes at a time, it's kind of like what I do now. But now I'm just looking at, let's say thousands of crashes at a time.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So we're about finished. Anything you want to close on? Anything particularly you want to show us before we run out of time?
Well, I guess one thing I could show you is we can take a look at a dump file, and I can show you some of the other information. So. Notice that the file that I've opened up here is a cab file. Mm-hmm. So the cab file is the data that is it actually has the XML files that's been embedded in it. And that has additional information that may not be in the mini dump file, such as this various file version information. Mm-hmm. So
the debugger can open a cab file. It knows, it's a native format for it. It knows mm-hmm. that.
So you can see we ran a banganalyze-v here. And the banganalyze-v shows us this is a 133, which is this is actually a new bug check code for Windows 8, mm-hmm. Where if a CPU is basically not able to run any user code because it's been held at a high interrupt request level for too long, mm-hmm. Eventually, I think it's after 30 seconds or so, the system will now bug check, so we can actually find the causes of these hangs, because this would cause the system to be unresponsive.
Yeah.
So within this dump file, again, banganalyze-v, when we run it, we can see it's going to give us various information, including the bucket ID, and this is the string that is going to be sent up to the servers, and we'll figure out what problem is associated with that.
It will look semi-better for Microsoft because we have symbols, So we won't get this bad symbol resolution.
Right.
That's the public symbol showing there.
Yeah, and you can see that our follow-up here is just marked as machine owner. Although with our internal versions of the tool, we can break it down by, okay, we know that this team owns this binary, this team owns this binary, and we can use this to actually automatically even create bugs based on OCA data to get the problems directed to the right team. Because as much as I like looking at dumps, which is, I really do enjoy doing it all day long, it's nice to have a little bit of automated help to make sure that the triage of, you know, just taking a look at an issue, seeing which team is the right one to look at it, you know, that's a really important job of what Bang Analyze does, to make sure we can get the issues in front of the developers that should be fixing it.
Cool.
So if I run, I was going to try that. That didn't work. Let's see if find XML data is going to work.
Yay.
So Bang find XML data, this command is going to show you the information that's in this, it's called sysdata.xml, and that includes information about the various drivers on the system, and the versions of the drivers and the hardware. So again, this is the type of data that we can pull into a database and then find if, oh, we know that this particular video card or this particular device is showing up in many of these buckets, helps us to get an edge on what we should do to fix it when we don't have a lot of data to go on to begin with.
Cool. So, I think you got a second dump. What's the other one have?
So the other dump that I have here, this is a it's also a new bug check code for Windows 8, but this is actually not a bug check. This 144 is a new live dump mechanism that we're using with certain drivers. This particular one is USB, where let's say that the USB host controller has gone unresponsive or that there's some problem with it, where we can restart it, but there may be some impact, but we don't have to bug check the box.
Mm-hmm.
We still want to get data on these issues so we can figure out, okay, well, what happened? What can we do to make sure that this host controller problem doesn't happen?
Mm-hmm.
We have the ability to create a mini live dump that we can get enough state information to determine, okay, what was happening with this USB host controller, where now the USB stack could restart that device, and the user could continue working, but then we can still troubleshoot the root cause. So this 144 is a new USB live dump that allows us to get data to solve problems without having to crash machines.
That's cool. We're probably getting unknown bug checkers. This is the Windows 7 debugger, not the Windows 8 one.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because we actually have documented these.
Yeah.
And started putting these in. But I think this is something we're going to be looking at doing more as we can, is to be able to get troubleshooting data to solve non-fatal problems without having to bug check the machine. As you know, control scroll scroll is great to get a dump on a machine, but with the ability to do live dumps with live KD, you know, it's nice to be able to get data from a system without having to turn the screen blue.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Excellent. Well, that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can email us at defragtools@microsoft.com, or you can leave us a message in the show page, and we'll get back to you there. Thanks for watching.
Have a good week.
Thank you.